It's time for this week's edition of the Virtual Bible Study. The Virtual Bible Study is a live, internet-only call-in program dedicated to the honest study and discussion of God's Word. Do you have a question about something in the Bible? Or are you simply interested in learning more about the Scriptures? If so, we hope you'll stay tuned tonight as we look into the pages of God's Word. The Virtual Bible Study is brought to you this time each week by the College View Church of Christ in Columbia, Tennessee. You can participate in the discussion tonight by calling 931-381-4567 or by emailing your questions or comments from collegeview.com. We hope you'll take out your Bibles and study along with us as we begin an exciting study of God's Word on this edition of the Virtual Bible Study.
The Virtual Bible Study is live for this Thursday evening, March 11th, 2010. Thank you for being a part of the program tonight. My name is Jacob Gwynn. My father, Greg Gwynn, is here. Hello, Dad.
Jacob, great to be with you. Always look forward to our Thursday night Bible studies.
And we are looking forward to tonight's topic, and we look forward to hearing from you on the program tonight at 877-381-4567, questions@collegeview.com. You can also join in with other listeners in the chat room tonight. If you'll go to our Ustream page, there will be a chat room where you can join in with other listeners. We hope you will do that on the program tonight. Tonight will be a follow-up program to an interesting discussion we had last week.
Last week we talked about the age of the earth. Well, we talked with Dwight McGee, an astronomy teacher from Florence, Alabama, and we discussed the age of the earth and all of the evidence that points to the fact that the earth and the universe is young, not old. When we say young, we're talking about in the range of thousands of years old, not millions of years old. And that's a really important consideration to the general question of evolution. Evolution, everybody agrees that if evolution happened, it happened over a long, long period of time. It would take a long time, it is claimed. If the theory is true at all, if it could possibly happen, we're going to talk tonight about the fact that it couldn't have happened no matter how much time you gave it. But even the evolutionists would argue that if it happened, it happened over a long, long period of time. Therefore, the question of the age of the earth is very critical to a study of the general theory of evolution, Jacob, because if you can take the time factor out, really you've killed the whole concept of the general theory of evolution. And I think we can take the time away from them. It's just not there. That's what we talked about last week. We talked about the age of the earth and universe. And we had really intended last week to get into more other arguments that disprove the general theory of evolution. We didn't have time to get to them, so we're going to do that tonight.
All right, and certainly you probably have studied this topic before and you have some thoughts you'd like to add. We look forward to hearing from you on the phone, over the email tonight, or over in the chat room. We'd love to hear your thoughts. And, you know, we're talking about two extremes here. We're not talking about is the earth 1,000 years old or is it 1,001 year old. We're talking about is it billions of years versus a few thousand of years. That's the spread we're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking about the difference between the length of that pencil lead and a lap around the earth.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the age of the earth is a really interesting study. We sure did appreciate Dwight McGee being with us last week to talk about that. But that's just sort of one element of the argument against the general theory of evolution. We had an email we didn't get to last week from our friend Anthony here in Columbia, Tennessee, and I want to sort of read what he had to say just as an introduction to these other things we want to talk about. Anthony says, evolution is simply a way for people who are starting with the assumption that there is no God to speculate about how our universe and mankind came to exist. Evolution is not testable. It is not provable. Therefore, it is, by definition, unscientific. It is simply a theory based upon dozens of fatally flawed assumptions. At its core, it is actually very ironic that evolutionists must believe in miracles, that something came from nothing. Last week, Jacob, we were talking about the fact that where did the matter of the universe come from? And then even if you had matter, how did non-living matter come to life? That would be a miraculous event. And the evolutionist has to believe in it. He says it's ironic that they have to believe in miracles, that something came from nothing, while simultaneously denigrating people who believe in the real miracle of God's creation. Now, he mentioned something here that we really need to talk about. He says, as a side note, we need to be sure that we understand the difference between micro and macro evolution. Macro evolution is what we mean when we talk about evolution. That's what I refer to, by the way, is the general theory of evolution.
Okay.
He says this is the idea that humans evolved from monkeys. Microevolution, on the other hand, and sometimes it's referred to as specific evolution. Micro or specific evolution is an observable and provable phenomenon, and we must be sure that we do not shoot ourselves in the foot by claiming it is false. Natural selection does result in minor changes and even new species, but it cannot account for major changes of one kind to another kind. By this, I mean a cat cannot become a dog via natural selection. Cats and dogs are two different kinds or types of animals. The word kind appears 17 times within the first seven chapters of Genesis. These kinds are certain types of animals, and they do not mix. Once God created dogs, for example, certain natural forces in conjunction with genetics have over time resulted, no doubt, in many more species of dogs than there were at the creation. But dogs are still dogs and have always been dogs. Animals do adapt to their environment, and they can experience microevolution, but God has placed inherent limits in their genetic material such they cannot morph into entirely different kinds. As another note, I hope all listeners realize and stand firm on the fact that humans are not animals. We are not simply another type of mammal, as the scientific world and our schools would teach us. We were made in God's image and are made totally separate from the animal creation. We must not forget this. I think that's a good note. But what Anthony was saying there is certainly a point worth clarifying at the start of our discussion. We understand that slight changes do occur within animal kinds or types. Human beings, for instance, are generally taller in our generation than they were four or five generations ago. And so we do see changes within species. And as Anthony said, depending on how you define the word species, like dogs, they come up with new species of dogs, for instance, by crossbreeding and selective genetic choices.
Your vegetables in your garden are specifically bred to give the characteristics of what they want.
But a dog stays a dog, a cat stays a cat, a cow stays a cow. They don't change.
That's right.
And so there is change within species, but there is not one species or one kind, I think is the right word that Anthony uses. There doesn't become another. So there is micro, small change evolution. We observe that. We know that's true. What we're arguing is there's not macro or general evolution. The general theory of evolution suggests that sometime in the far distant past, some bit of non-living matter suddenly generated into life, a spontaneous generation of life from non-living matter. Of course, that's never been reproduced. Under the best laboratory conditions, it cannot be duplicated.
Yeah, that's right. That's something you need to point out, because this was all at my chance. Things just happened to be right. But we go to the laboratory where we can control all the variables. And if there was a certain combination that there needed to be, certainly we would have found it.
Right. And it can't, and the best scientists working with the best equipment in the best environments cannot duplicate that. But we're to believe that a single cell came to life in that non-living matter, a single-celled organism came to life. The complexities of even a single-cell organism are far beyond the capabilities of that happening. But if you assume that it did, and then that single cell grew, divided, multiplied, reproduced, and changed, evolved into all the millions of different kinds of life forms that exist on planet Earth today. That's what we're supposed to believe. That is the general theory of evolution. And that's what we're saying is not true.
877-381-4567, questions at collegeview.com. You know, they want us to believe these are small, gradual steps. But as you said, even one cell is an enormous step from just being a matter, a non-living matter, to one living cell.
That's right.
Think of all the DNA, the other functions of that cell. It's not just a gradual step.
Do you remember when we were in school? I know you had to do it, Jacob, because I remember helping you make a model of a single living cell, mm-hmm. with all the different components that are found in one living cell. And we're supposed to believe that all of that came to life from non-living matter in an unexplained way that has never been duplicated. It just and by the way, we're going to talk about later in the program, that is actually goes against the known laws of science to suggest that that could happen.
877-381-4567, questions at collegeview.com. Join in with the listeners in the chat room tonight. If you're in the chat room, we just read an email from Anthony. He is going by the name Bismarck in the chat room, so you know who you're talking to there. And we'd like to hear your thoughts as well. Join in on the discussion. Let us know what you're thinking as we talk about evolution on the virtual Bible study tonight.
You know, one of the things that I think a lot of our listeners would agree with me is very frustrating is when in the news media we see reports of evolution as being proven and factual. And I think Anthony said in his email, it's not provable, it's not even testable. And for the media to have an obvious agenda to promote the cause is really disgusting. And yet a lot of people are deceived by that. And I think it's been a challenge to a lot of people's faith because this is reported as fact again and again and again.
And it's not testable, it's detestable.
Yeah.
877-381-4567.
You know, even in the scientific community, there's a lot of disagreement about evolution. Even among those who claim they believe in evolution, there's a lot of disagreement. Here's a couple of quotes. In the book Origin of Species by Darwin, in an introduction by a man named Thompson, it says, as we know, there's a great divergence of opinion among biologists, not only about the causes of evolution, but even about the actual process. This divergence exists because the evidence is unsatisfactory and does not permit any certain conclusions. It is therefore right and proper to draw the attention of the non-scientific public to the disagreements about evolution. I mean, even scientists admit we don't know how this happened and we're not in agreement. We can speculate and we're guessing, but we don't have the proof, and therefore we don't even agree about the basics of this theory.
All right. And so it sounds like they've got a lot of faith in their assumptions as they ridicule those who would have faith. I believe you wrote an article about that not too long ago, Dad, about those who believe in this really do have make far more leaps of faith than those who would believe in God.
Yeah, they ridicule the people with faith and say that we believe in the unprovable or we just take a blind leap of faith. But they do that and do it more illogically or unreasonably than we do. We admit that we believe in an uncaused first cause, God. They also believe in an uncaused first cause, and yet it is not. It has no basis or logic about it at all.
And then they believe in several other uncaused causes along the way. It's not just one thing that would require a miracle on their part. We're going to take a break. Before we take the break, we do need to make an announcement, and we've been meaning to make the announcement for a while now. There are some listeners in the chat room tonight, one listener in particular, who has a broadcast similar to ours out in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. John in Oklahoma City conducts a study, and you can find it at scripturalway.org, the Scriptural Way broadcast. It's on Thursday or Tuesday evenings at 7:30, and it is an hour long.
At 7:30 our time, Central Time.
Central Time, that's right. So go to scripturalway.org if you're interested in that study. We appreciate John. John is always very diligent to be in our chat room and participating in the discussion. We appreciate him being there. And so you might be interested in checking out John's program. You can view archives, and if you don't catch it live, you can check it out there. So appreciate that effort going on out in Oklahoma.
Yes, we recommend John and his program to you at scripturalway.org. And before we go to our break, let us remind everyone of the questions that we put out earlier today to our update list. We simply said, if you believe in evolutionists, if you believe in evolution, give us your best arguments as to why. If you don't believe in the general theory of evolution or macroevolution, as we just identified it, give us your best reasons why you do not. And we'd love to hear your input on that. We're going to cover several arguments here in our program tonight. We'd love to hear what is the most compelling argument to you to either believe in evolution or to not believe in evolution.
Okay. Get in line. Let us know your thoughts. We'll take a break and continue on the other side. Don't go anywhere. The virtual Bible study continues right after this.
Have you checked out all of the resources on collegeview.com lately? Check it out now while you listen to these important messages. The virtual Bible study will be right back after this.
I'm Greg Gwynn, a host of the Virtual Bible Study. Thanks for joining us for tonight's program. The Virtual Bible Study is presented weekly by the College View Church of Christ in Columbia, Tennessee. Each week on the Virtual Bible Study, we simply engage in the study of God's Word in an effort to better understand it, better understand how God views us, and better understand what He wants from us in our lives. We're not studying any creeds. We're not studying any books written by men. We're just studying the Bible. And we're trying to study the Bible alone without any of our opinions or wisdom mixed in. We're only interested in what our Creator has revealed to us in His Word. We realize that we're fallible and cannot direct our own steps. As a result, what we think or feel doesn't really matter. All that matters is what God has said. So that's what the Virtual Bible Study is all about. It's pretty simple, isn't it? Thanks again for joining us tonight, and we'll hope you'll make plans to join us every Thursday night for the Virtual Bible Study.
Hi, I'm Jack Coleman, a member of the College View Church of Christ, with a suggestion for you and your family. Why not turn off the TV on Thursday nights and gather the family around the computer for an hour of in-depth Bible study? The virtual Bible study always involves subjects of importance and interest to serious Bible students. So, why not join this Internet Bible study group every Thursday night?
For he hath said, I will never leave thee, nor forsake thee, so that we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, and I will not fear what man shall do unto me. Hebrews 13, verses 5 and 6. The virtual Bible study continues.
Welcome back into the virtual Bible study tonight as we talk about evolution, and we look forward to hearing from you. We have an email coming in from a voice you just heard. Jack in Hampshire, Tennessee, has some thoughts for us on the program tonight.
Jack is talking about what we were just talking about, you know, the complexities of an individual single cell and the possibility that it could happen by chance. He says a very basic way to challenge evolution requires only a look in our eighth grade science textbooks. Most know that as the cell reproduces, it goes through a process known as DNA replication. That is the unzipping of the double helix structure and the duplication and creating of a new strand of DNA. The DNA place the correct nucleotide with its complementary nucleotide. You're way beyond me here, Jack. When an accidental here's the point.
Yeah, we're getting dizzy over here, Jack. Take it easy.
When an accidental pair-up takes place, in other words, say there's some mistake in the alignment of the DNA. When an accidental pair-up takes place, a self-correcting process begins. An enzyme comes in, cuts out the incorrectly placed nucleotide, and the process is corrected. If evolution is true, then either the problem arose first, an incorrectly placed nucleotide, or the self-correcting process evolved first, one or the other. If the problem arose first, then the DNA would have been duplicated incorrectly, and the organism's newly made cell would not be an accurate copy, thus killing the organism, not enabling any of its cells to replicate, and not giving the organism even a chance to evolve a correcting process. If the self-correcting process came first, for what reason? Why would a cell evolve a process to correct a problem it had never encountered? Both processes had to have come about at the same time due to a previous knowledge that this problem would occur, and he suggests that is intelligent design. That's actually from Zach Coleman. And Zach, we appreciate that. You've got some information there that I thought
Jack had a pretty good remembrance of that.
I thought that sounded pretty complicated for Jack to be making, but I can understand Zach making that argument. Thanks, Zach. We appreciate
those good comments. 877-381-4567. Send an email to questions@collegeview.com like Zach did, or join in the chat room with other listeners tonight.
All right. And we see in the chat room that we're identifying that comment as Zach, and we appreciate Zach for doing it. A good argument. And basically what Zach was saying there, you've got two processes at work, and they couldn't have evolved separately.
It happens to happen at one time.
And there's so much about creation like that, that things had to have happened together simultaneously. In other words, and this multiplies the complexity of the chance, and this is the argument of intelligent design, as Zach rightfully mentioned. There is just so much evidence of an intelligence behind what we see in the creation, and that it could happen, and that everything necessary could happen simultaneously. For instance, the argument is made about the human eye. There's a lot of complex things going on in the eye. And it all had to come together simultaneously, or the supposedly evolving organism would have said, that doesn't work, throw that away. We got something there, but it's not doing anything.
Right.
Because if the eye had not fully evolved to be able to function at even an elementary level, supposedly natural selection would have said, well, that's a useless feature. We'll get rid of that, and then we'll keep mutating on.
Right.
You know,
we're going to keep this piece of an eyelid around here with no eyeball to cover up just because we like it.
Yeah.
It doesn't work that way in the theory of evolution.
That's right. So, Zach, you got a good point.
Okay. And as we get into this discussion, we'll find out that the fossil record does not coincide with what Zach is mentioning there and what you're mentioning. We ought to see various stages of development. We simply don't see that in the fossil record.
Yeah, let's go to an argument that I think is real powerful, and it is that argument about the fossil record, Jacob. If evolution happened, then what we ought to be able to see preserved in the fossils is a record of things gradually changing. For instance, an illustration of this would be evolutionists tell us that modern-day birds evolved from the reptile family, okay? And so if that happened, what we would expect to see as we dig up fossils all over the earth is we'd expect to see some fossils that show this process taking place. In other words, something begins to change, and it's a little different than a reptile. Now, it's certainly not a bird yet, but it's not exactly a reptile anymore either. And then over time, it becomes less like a reptile and more like a bird. And over time, it becomes then fully a bird, not a reptile at all. And as that process happened, and the evolutionists would argue that it took a long time for that to happen, then we would expect to find evidence of those things preserved in the fossil record. In fact, Charles Darwin, who's a lot of times credited as the father of modern evolution, although I think he probably just formalized some arguments that had been around long before he was around. Here's what he said. He said, the number of intermediate and transitional links between all living and extinct species must have been inconceivably great. And so Darwin said, if this happened, then there would have been a lot of these intermediate forms. For instance, between reptiles and birds, there would have been an inconceivably great number of intermediate links in between. In other words, it didn't happen all at once. It took a long time to happen, and we would expect to find evidence of that happening in the fossil record. But it's not there.
You know, it's taking millions of years. I don't know when the first cell was supposedly came around in the evolutionary timeline.
Well, about,
hundreds of millions of years old.
Millions of years ago. The Earth and our solar system supposedly formed about 4 billion years ago. And I'm drawing a blank, but I think that evolutionists suggest that life on Earth has been evolving for close to a billion years.
Close to a billion years of life.
I think. I've kind of losing my...
Maybe they can help us out with that in the chat room.
Yeah, maybe the chat room knows how long life... When did this supposed spontaneous generation of life from non-living...
Let's just say it was 10 million years.
It was way longer.
Let's just say it was 10 millions of years, and these cells and these organisms have gradually changed. Then we ought to be able to find fossils all over the place. The evolutionists tell us we're looking for a missing link. There ought to be missing links all over the place. You couldn't go out and dig a hole in your backyard without coming across a missing link if evolution is true. Because these things were dying all over the place in these gradual forms. And as you said, we don't have anything that gives us an indication. We've got a lot of scams where people have put things together and made it look like missing links, but we have no missing links.
In fact, here's what actually occurs in the fossil record. You got complex life forms suddenly appearing in the fossil record, complex life forms multiplying after their own kind in the fossil record. No transitional links between different biological families in the fossil record. Now, here's what Darwin said about that. And I guess you got to credit the guy for at least being honest about it. Here, Darwin said, intermediate links, question. Geology surely does not reveal any such finely graduated organic change, and this is perhaps the most obvious and serious objection which can be urged against the theory of evolution. Now, again, that's from his book, The Origin of Species. Darwin admitted that we would expect to see lots of intermediate links, but in other words, transitional forms, and there are none, and therefore he says that he thought that this was the best argument that could be posed against his theory of evolution. So that's Darwin's own mouth saying, we got a problem here. We should be able to find them, and we can't, and that's a problem to us.
All right, Darwin admits that they got the problem.
Yeah.
All right.
Here's another quote from a fellow named David Kitts, who is a paleontologist, an evolutionary paleontologist. A paleontologist is simply a guy who studies fossils. Now this fellow happens to be a PhD and the curator of the Department of Geology at Stovall Museum, and he says, despite the bright promise that paleontology, or the study of fossils, provides a means of, quote, seeing evolution, it has presented some nasty difficulties for the evolutionists, the most notorious of which is the presence of gaps in the fossil record. Evolution requires intermediate forms between species, and paleontology does not provide them. And so here's a guy who's a PhD in the field of fossils, and he says, they're not there. We simply don't have them. Another professor in Sweden named Nielsen wrote, the fossil material is now so complete that the lack of transitional series cannot be explained by the scarcity of the material. The deficiencies are real. They will never be filled. In other words, this guy is saying it's not the case that they're out there and we just haven't found them yet. He's saying we've done enough research and we found enough fossil evidence everywhere all around the earth. These gaps in the fossil record are not going to be found. They're not there. He admits that. And then I liked one from a doctor named Watson, Lyle Watson.
Not the Dr. Watson that we're familiar with.
No, this is Dr. Lyle Watson. Okay. And he writes, the fossils that decorate our family tree are so scarce that there are still more scientists than specimens. The remarkable fact is that all the physical evidence we have for human evolution can still be placed with room to spare inside a single coffin. Of course, I don't think there's any evidence of human evolution, but he's saying we just don't have much. There's not, the fossils don't help us prove evolution. In fact, we would argue the fossils prove just the opposite.
All right, we have some dates for you on this timeline. Okay. Because, you know, we're talking about these things are dying off. They're leaving records. 3 billion years ago.
3 billion.
We have the first signs of life.
And, on planet Earth.
And this is from a NASA website. We have the first signs of life on planet Earth 3 million years ago. And then
3 billion.
3 billion years ago, I'm sorry, 3 billion years ago.
Yeah, with a billion with a B.
Then 510 million years ago, we have the first marine hard-shelled animals, 510 million years ago, and it goes from there. 450 million years ago, the first fish, and 410 million years ago, the first land land plants. First land animals are 350 million years ago. So these land animals have been crawling around the Earth for 350 million years. Falling off here and there, dying, fossils being formed, and we can't find any of the missing links.
Yeah, John in the chat room confirms what you said, and he gives a link there to a Wikipedia article, Timeline of Evolution. The basic timeline is 4.6 billion years old for the Earth. Other approximate dates, 3 billion years for the first simple cells, 3 billion years for photosynthesis to begin, 2 billion years for complex cells.
All right, and we had the first land animals 350 million years ago, the first humans 2 million years ago. So if I do the math, that's about 308 million years, give or take a million, of these fossils that we ought to be able to find. Yeah.
And again, we're talking about huge spans of time. I mean, for instance, we're told that the dinosaurs became extinct 65 million years ago, supposedly. So, I mean, we're talking about huge spans of times. And as we already talked about in last week's program, the time's not there. There was no such time.
And these are gradual links. The way they talk about it, you would think there was a monkey swinging around in a tree. Boop, he has some kind of weird deformed baby. And then, boop, that baby has a human. And there's just one generation.
Well, actually, there is a thing. That some scientists try to get around this problem of no fossil evidence of evolution. There is a theory that's called punctuated equilibrium. And it's an obvious ploy to try and circumvent this argument that we're making, that the fossil record doesn't show evolution. And punctuated equilibrium suggests everything went along for long periods of time at equilibrium. Nothing was changing. Then all of a sudden, there was a bunch of change. But it happened real quick.
And we couldn't get in the fossil record.
Well, it was so quick that there weren't any fossils left behind. Mm-hmm. And then it hit another period of equilibrium. And then after millions and millions of years, bang, another big jump and change in living organisms happened. And then it hit equilibrium again. But those punctuated equilibrium, what's that called? And the jumps or changes happened quickly so that it didn't have time to leave evidence in the fossil record. It transpired so quickly.
Maybe it was a miracle.
I don't know.
All right, we're going to take a break, and we've got a phone call we'll get on the other side. Don't go anywhere. The virtual Bible study continues after this week's bullet point.
After these important messages, we'll be back to take your comments. Email them during this break.
This is Greg Gwynn with this week's bullet point. Here's an interesting challenge. Sit down and write a list of all the things you would be willing to die for. It shouldn't take too long to write your list, but having completed your list of things you'd be willing to die for, you will also have made a list of things you ought to be living for. These are the things that will bring the greatest happiness and fulfillment in your life. What kind of things would you put on your list? Christ and His church? Your family? Your country? A very close friend? This is probably as far as most folks would be willing to go. But think about this. Would you die for your job? Certainly not. Your job is not that important. Would you die for your hobby? A ball game? A round of golf? A camping trip? Or for your television set? Of course not. Now that we have your list all properly arranged, look at it again. It may be that you've not been carefully following the right priorities, the very things on your own list. For instance, how many people are sacrificing their spiritual service in the Lord's church and their own families for the sake of their jobs? Too many Christians are guilty of putting their jobs ahead of everything else. Or think how often we hear Christians who forsake the assemblies in order to spend a weekend at the lake, or camping in the mountains, or attending a ball game. And even more are guilty of neglecting their duties of prayer, study, worship, and teaching while they sit idly in front of a television set watching shows they shouldn't see. A successful life is the product of following the right priorities. Christian, are you living for the things you would be willing to die for? That's this week's bullet point. Think about it.
My name is Alex Dvorak, reminding you to listen to the virtual Bible study every Thursday night at 8 o'clock Central Time.
Missed a recent virtual Bible study program? Listen to any of our past programs from the archives section of our website. Now, back to the virtual Bible study.
And welcome back to the virtual Bible study tonight. We're glad you're part of it as we talk about evolution. We're looking forward to hearing from you. Let us know your thoughts over the phone, over email, or in the chat room tonight. And Debbie in Lakeland, Florida, is, get this, Dad, she's learning to use her computer tonight, and she stumbled across the virtual Bible study.
Great. We're glad you found us, Debbie.
Welcome to the program, Debbie.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, if we were talking about evolution tonight, did you have some thoughts to throw into the conversation?
Yes, sir. I don't believe in Darwinism. God is God. But God, I think, because God is God, made things scientifically and everything else. For man, I mean, he's God. He can create things. He created art and history and music, and God's the creator of all things. And if there's things out there for people to study, scientists, archaeologists, what have you, it's because God created it for them to study. Man also has the choice to take things however he wants. So if he wants to go a little out there with it and try to say it's not God, well, that's the choice God's given man.
Well, that's for sure. God has given us all free choice. What we're doing, though, in our discussion is trying to suggest that if we will look at this objectively and really consider the evidence, it's clear that what non-believing scientists have suggested in regards to the idea that life evolved and that humans evolved just simply isn't. You may note, if you've been listening for the whole program, we haven't even referenced a single Bible verse in our program tonight, because we understand that if you're going to try to convince an evolutionist, you can't use the Bible because he doesn't believe the Bible.
Right.
But there's an abundance of scientific evidence that says evolution didn't happen. It couldn't have happened. It's not even true to the law. We're not talking about the laws of the Bible. We're talking about the laws of science. Evolution is not true to the basic laws of science. And so it's just an illogical theory that some have gone to, I think, for the reason of trying to prove that we exist without God. And as you said, God created everything. We do not exist without God. We exist because of God.
Exactly, right.
All right, Debbie. Well, thanks for listening to us in Lakeland, Florida.
I'm sorry. What I picked up on my computer was not this discussion. The one I picked up on my computer was the one on who should go to heaven.
Oh, okay.
I was totally unprepared for this.
Oh, yeah, that's fine.
That's okay.
You got into our archive page. We've got all of our past programs on there. There's a ton of them there and lots of different subjects. We talk about a different subject every week. And so
we're live at 9 o'clock your time every week.
Yeah, bookmark us and come back and join us.
Have you figured out how to bookmark on your computer yet?
No, I'm still learning.
Okay. All right, well, learn how to do that and come back and join us any Thursday night. Glad to have you in our listening audience.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Debbie.
Bye-bye.
All right, good to hear from Debbie tonight. 877-381-4567, questions@collegeview.com. She was in the archive. That would be confusing to be listening to one subject and then come call in to something being live on a different. But she did a great job, and so we appreciate her comments. And that is a good reminder for us to let our listeners know that we have all of our programs for the last 5 years archived on our website, so a wide variety of topics for you to study. Looking forward to hearing from you at 877-381-4567 or email questions@collegeview.com.
Got an email from our friend Skip in Greencastle, Indiana, who writes, he says, I hope this makes sense. He says, as you've already noted, explaining any of the complex structures by chance defies reasonable explanation. I believe something even more inexplicable is from where did the information come that would be instructions for the various formations. For instance, the DNA code in a cell. Where did that come from?
Right.
It's what he's already. An illustration of this would be one can have the letters of the alphabet, but to have those letters form into words that have meaning is something else. The meaning is something apart from the letters. The letter, in other words, he's saying there's letters, then there's letters in an organized form that convey a message.
Right.
The information is something apart from the physical structure. Where did that information come from? I think that's exactly right. In other words, I've heard it illustrated this way. If all the complexity of the human body just evolved by chance, then in relative terms, that's about as logical as saying you could set a monkey down at a computer keyboard and let him type away, and given enough time, he would compose a complete set of encyclopedias. In other words, what's the chance that would happen? I mean, he doesn't have the intelligence in himself to cause it to happen, but just by randomly poking away on the keys, he ends up with a finished product that is volumes upon volumes of perfectly organized sentences. It would never happen. Anybody would say that could never happen. But that's what they're saying. That's what evolution is basically arguing for the complexities of life on Earth. All of that information coming together. In other words, as Skip's saying, the various parts are one thing. Having them organized is another, and that's what just simply couldn't happen.
I've heard it explained this way. It's the equivalent of a tornado going through a Home Depot store and building a neighborhood.
Exactly.
It just doesn't happen, and it will never happen, and it cannot. It's against the laws of science. Let us know your thoughts. Give us a call or send us an email.
Another email from Indiana says, humans have changed over the years mainly to our achieving the ability to expand our knowledge of what is out there in nature, better foods, medicine, understanding of what is needed to improve life. This is where we change our environment to meet our needs and not our physical being to meet nature's demands. We evolve mentally, getting smarter by gaining knowledge of our surroundings and using our minds to succeed. This happens a lot faster than waiting for evolution to do its thing. I do not think I could wait 1 million years to find a better way to make toast.
Well, not in the morning you could.
I think that's right. No, and I think that's right. No, and what is being suggested there is what, way back to the start of our program, change does take place within species, but we don't get new kinds evolving. In other words, a man is a man, and a man will always be a man, and he's not going to evolve into something else. Human beings are human, and we're going to stay human. We may see minor changes in the human skeletal structure or even in the human brain capacity, but we're still going to be human. We're going to have all the basic characteristics of humanity.
All right. So we've talked about the fact that that science doesn't give us any proof in the fossil record for their theory of evolution. It's simply, there's no proof, there's no history of it. We can't find any record that this evolution occurred. While it did happen over millions of years, there is no record, there's no trace that can be found of evolution actually occurring. They want us to believe it without any proof, without any evidence. But it also violates known laws of science. We need to remember that evolution is a theory. The media, the school systems will not let us know that it is a theory. They will minimize the fact that it is a theory, that it's unproven. But it is an unproven theory. But the theory violates known laws of science. laws and principles that we can go into a laboratory, we can prove, we can demonstrate, we can repeat laws of science. The theory violates the laws of science.
Jack, in, now this is from Jack, not Zach. This is from Jack in Hampshire. And he says, one of my best arguments against the general theory of evolution is that it violates the second law of thermodynamics and leaves us to believe that human conscience developed as a result of mere chemicals. He says, the second law of thermodynamics. I don't believe the general theory of evolution because it is contrary to the second law of thermodynamics. The second law of thermodynamics refers to, refers to the universal tendency for things on their own to mix with their surrounding environment over time, becoming less ordered and eventually reaching a steady state. A glass of hot water becomes room temperature, buildings decay into rubble, and the stars will eventually burn out, leading to the heat death of the universe. However, the evolutionary scenario poses that over time, on their own, things became more ordered and structured. Somehow the energy of the Big Bang structured itself into stars, galaxies, planets, and living things, contrary to the second law. It is sometimes said that the energy of the sun was enough to overcome this tendency and to allow for the formation of life on Earth. However, application of energy alone is not enough to overcome this tendency. The energy must be channeled by a machine. A human must repair a building to keep it from decaying. Likewise, it is the machinery of photosynthesis which harnesses the energy of the sun, allowing life to exist. And photosynthesis is itself a complex chemical process. The maturing of an acorn into a tree, or a zygote, the first cell resulting from fertilization into a mature human being, does not violate the second law, as these processes are guided by the information already present in the acorn or the zygote. My reference is the second law of thermodynamics found at answersingenesis.org. I think that's right. What we see, even in the human species, is as time goes on, the gene pool of the human race becomes more compromised. What we believe would be the case is that when God first created Adam and Eve, the genes that they possessed were perfect and unflawed. But over time, by various mutations which occurred, that gene pool would become corrupted to the point now that we have the potential when a child is born that there might be some deficiency in the genetic makeup, that the mother and father come together and a complication occurs because of some flaw in the genes and the combination of the genes. And so even in the humankind, we see sort of a devolving, not an evolving, in that sense.
Well, you would think you should, because of the second law of thermodynamics. It's a law, it happens. And you should see that happening in nature, whereas evolution requires that things went from a state of utter disorder, and order began to evolve out of the disorder. It turns the second law of thermodynamics on its head.
Let me read an email from our friend Jim in Mount Pleasant, Tennessee, who writes, "My main disagreement with Darwin's general theory of evolution is the concept of beneficial mutations. When in a species you have a mutation, a change in structure, this mutation must be assumed to be beneficial, better, and stronger. Not only this, but any mutation must exist in pairs in order for the species to propagate and for said propagation to continue. In other words, if you have a monkey which mutates into a subhuman, you need two monkeys to mutate at the same time in order for them to mate and continue the mutation until the next generation. Else, you have one mutation which then mates with the previous link of the species, and you cannot guarantee the continued existence of the mutation strain."
That's a good point.
So what you need, in effect, is a miracle, he says. By the way, you know, evolution, based on what Jim is just suggesting, the general theory of evolution requires an incredible long chain of consecutively beneficial mutations in order for everything to evolve from that first simple cell. In other words, it wasn't just 1, 2, 10, or 10,000. It was billions upon billions, trillions, quadrillions of beneficial mutations which occurred in a progressive order to bring life to a higher level. Now, think about that. When you hear the word mutation, you don't think of something good. If I told you, Jacob, a friend of ours, let's say, had a baby and it had a mutation, you'd say, "Oh, great.
It's going to be an NBA basketball
star. Oh, yeah, that's fantastic. The baby had a mutation."
Yeah.
No, you'd say, Oh, that's too bad. What's going to happen? What's the prognosis? Because we understand that mutations almost exclusively, in fact, for all intents and purposes, exclusively, mutations are bad, not good.
Yeah.
But evolution says we had this incredible long chain of beneficial mutations. Exactly right.
All right. Well,
Jim, real quickly, and we got time for a break.
Go ahead. Take it.
Jim concludes this. He says, here's a quote from the website All About Science. Darwin's theory of evolution, a theory in crisis. Darwin's theory of evolution is a theory in crisis in light of the tremendous advances we've made in molecular biology, biochemistry, and genetics over the past 50 years. We now know that there are in fact tens of thousands of irreducibly complex systems on the cellular level. Specified complexity pervades the microscopic biological world. Molecular biologist Michael Denton wrote, quote, although the tiniest bacterial cells are incredibly small, weighing less than 10 to the minus 12 grams, each is in effect a veritable micro miniaturized factory containing thousands of exquisitely designed pieces of intricate molecular machinery made up altogether of 100,000 million atoms, far more complicated than any machinery built by man and absolutely without parallel in the non-living world. And we don't need a microscope to observe irreducible complexity. The eye, the ear, and the heart are all examples of irreducible complexity, though they were not recognized as such in Darwin's day. Nevertheless, Darwin confessed, quote, to suppose that the eye, with all its inimitable contrivances for adjusting the focus to different distances, for admitting different amounts of light, and for the correction of spherical and chromatic aberration, could have been formed by natural, in other words, to suggest that this could have been formed by natural selection seems, I freely confess, absurd in the highest degree. Even Darwin admitted the problem of irreducible complexity, intelligent design.
All right. Thank you for that email, John. And we're going to take a break. And on the other side of the break, we'll have time for your comments. Join in the chat room. Send us an email. Give us a call. Don't go anywhere. We go to the top of the hour right after this.
Are you listening? There's going to be a test on this stuff. Stay tuned. The virtual Bible study will be right back after this.
Hello, everyone. I'm Monty, a member of the College View Church of Christ. So you've been hearing all about the College View Church of Christ on the virtual Bible study and are interested in finding out more about the church. But you live hundreds of miles away from Columbia, Tennessee, and can't come and visit with the congregation to find out more. There's no reason to fear. After all, we live in the 21st century. Here's what you can do to find out more about the College View Church of Christ. First, why don't you check out our website while you're listening to the virtual Bible study? You'll find important information about the church there, including bulletin articles there on various subjects, and can even listen to sermons that have been presented at the College View Church in the past. Secondly, if you have questions about the church or about any Bible teaching, why don't you send an email to us and let us know how we can help? Send your questions to questions@collegeview.com. That address, once again, is questions@collegeview.com. We can even have a personal Bible study with you over email if you desire. And finally, if you would rather talk with someone in person, give us a call at 931-381-4567. That's 931-381-4567. You can call this number anytime. If you don't get an answer, leave a message and we'll call you back as soon as we can. We're glad you're listening to the virtual Bible study and hope to hear from you soon.
I am Nestor Sanchez from Arica, Chile in South America, and I love to listen to the virtual Bible study. And this moment, I invite you to participate in this program too. Gracias.
Broadcasting around the world with truths that are out of this world. The virtual Bible study. Take it away, guys.
And we're back on the virtual Bible study tonight. We'll remind you this program is brought to you by the College View Church of Christ. Find out more about the College View Church of Christ by visiting our website, thevirtualbiblestudy.com or collegeview.com. If you are in the Columbia, Tennessee area, come and visit with the College View Church of Christ at your earliest convenience to find out what the College View Church of Christ is all about. We're talking about evolution on the program tonight, and it simply is a theory that does not work. It contradicts the laws of science.
Jacob, I did not finish one of our emails from Jack, in which he went on a little bit further to say one of the things that is unexplainable by evolution is the human conscience. He says a person is a unity of body and mind and soul, the mind and soul being the immaterial part of you that is the real inner you. Chemicals alone cannot explain self-awareness, creativity, reasoning, emotions of love and hate, sensations of pleasure and pain, possessing and remembering experiences, and free will. Reason itself cannot be relied upon if it is based only on blind neurological events. He says, my reference here is The Origin of the Brain and Mind by, and I think that's the Apologetics Press. And it gives a reference there. I think that's right. You know, even if, and this goes to a point Anthony's earlier email said, we're not just animals. Animals don't possess this inner being that we possess and don't have an appreciation for the kind of things that are mentioned in that email. Where did that come about? And what would be the evolutionary benefit of that? You know, what does it do for me as far as my survival and existence to be able to appreciate a beautiful sunset? What does that do for me? I mean, as far as my survival is, it doesn't do anything.
Okay. And there's another thing that it doesn't do anything for you, evolutionary terms-wise. What about the sense of right and wrong? That is exactly the opposite of what evolution would teach you. Evolution would teach you that you ought to do whatever it takes for you to survive, survival of the fittest, rather than being concerned about the weaker members of the society.
Yeah, where did the idea arise and from how did it come to be that we take care of our sick and weak and infirm and those who are unable to care for themselves? If evolution were true, it would be better for those to die off. We should kill them, maybe eat them, but we should definitely kill them because they're not doing anything. But you know what? You stop to think about it. That's what some of the social liberals in our society are suggesting. When people get old, when they get sick, it's not worth keeping them alive. We shouldn't bother to care for them. You know, they are actually suggesting, in their intellectual eliteness, they're actually suggesting a step back in progress, really, of humankind.
In their term, right. Yeah. Okay.
Real quickly, an email from Wade, who in reference to last week's program, wanted to suggest a book called Thousands, Not Billions by Dr. Don DeYoung, and it's published by the Institute for Creation Research. The book explores evidence that suggests that carbon dating is not accurate. For years, we've been told that carbon-14 dating is very accurate. Generally, scientists use this method to get all these extra zeros added to the ends of dates. Dr. DeYoung shows...
And if you're going to write a book about a young Earth, wouldn't you like to have the name Dr. DeYoung? Isn't that great?
That's ironic. Yeah. He looks at how fallible the method really is through several different studies that took a team of scientists 7 years to perform. And so that I think you can find that. It's if you get on the Internet and look for Institute for Creation Research and the book Thousands, Not Billions.
Okay.
All right. Now, one thing I wanted to touch on before we get done here, Jacob, is what is sometimes referred to as theistic evolution. And I think it's worth noting that that's an unnecessary compromise.
All right. Tell us what theistic evolution is, because you've got a couple $5 words there put together. What is theistic evolution?
Well, I think everybody can recognize theistic has to do with God from the root Greek word theos. Theistic, God, evolution. God caused evolution.
Okay.
And there are a lot of people who claim to believe in God, but in some way they feel an urgent necessity to be able to accommodate the claims of scientific evolutionists. And so they want to get an old universe. They got to get that time in there that we talked about last week. And then they've got to try to somehow say, well, sure, evolution happened. God just used that in his creative processes. Well, really, theistic evolution shares with just regular evolution, all the problems we've been talking about. The time doesn't exist from our program last week. There's not enough time. If evolution happened, even if God was causing it to happen, where are the fossils that show that it did happen? Where are the fossils? And again, if it happened, it would be contradictory to the laws of science that God himself put into place. God, you know, we talk about the laws of science as though there's some kind of abstract thing that just God wrote the laws of science. God's the one who put it in process. He's the one who established all these processes that happen in nature. He's the author of them all. Evolution, even if he supposedly caused the evolution, would go counter to and in violation of the basic laws of science.
So the only thing that theistic evolution buys you is it gets you out of the Big Bang problem.
Yeah. It gives us that uncaused first cause.
But you've got all the other leaps of faith along the way, other miracles, really, that would be required for the evolution to occur. It does not have any historical fact. It contradicts the laws of science. So it really is an unnecessary compromise. And it is a compromise in the face of what the Bible teaches.
Exactly right.
Why try and believe in God if you don't believe that he created this earth and all the things that are in it?
And we just have to agree that you can't have it both ways. The two cannot coexist. The belief in God and the creation as is described in the Bible cannot exist with the theory of evolution.
And let's go one step farther. The belief in God cannot exist with the belief in an old earth, as we talked about last week. The earth is young. The scriptures teach that it is, and science teaches that it is as well.
Exactly right. Real quickly, Jacob, I just wanted to deal with some objections that sometimes come up when we're trying to teach that God created everything that exists. He created in full developed form. He didn't use evolution to bring it about. God created everything a few thousand years ago. The earth is young, something less than 10,000 years old, probably more on the order of 6,000 years old. God created everything. Some questions come up. One of them is, well, the earth looks older than that. We talked a little bit about this last week. You know, for instance, we've got coal and oil and natural gas down in the earth. How did that get there? Because we're told that the way that got there was that organic matter died and was buried, and over time, under heat and pressure under the surface of the earth, it decomposed and formed into oil, coal, and natural gas. And coal, carbon deposits under longer periods of time and greater pressures turn into diamonds.
Mm-hmm, right.
How is it that we have these things in the earth if the earth hasn't been here long enough for those things to happen? Well, for one thing, we don't know how long it did take for those things to happen. We just don't know that. It's never been observed, obviously. But secondly, a very easy explanation is God created all these things in mature form, ready for us to discover and use it to accommodate our life on earth. We know that God created things, as we said last week, with apparent age. He didn't try to hide that from us. He created Adam, a full-grown man. First thing he told him was, be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah, right.
So we know, God didn't try to hide from us, that he created things in a mature form. The earth looks older? I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you judge that. But what we do know is that God created a mature universe. We know that. He told us so.
Okay. We had a question in the chat room. Quickly, we're out of time. But Mike posed the argument he's heard about what about the vestigial organs. If you don't know what the word vestigial means, that means your appendix, perhaps. Or
useless organs.
Useless organs.
You know, that a few centuries ago, experts claimed there were 180 vestigial organs in the human body. And the argument is they were there, but they're leftovers from when we were a lower life form.
180, huh?
And they're not necessary anymore. So the fact that they're there and not necessary anymore is proof that we've evolved from a lower life form.
Yeah,
actually, now doctors claim that there are less than 10 supposedly vestigial organs in the human body. What that means is they figured out what all of them are there for. And my guess is that the others have a purpose, too. We just haven't advanced medically enough to know what the purpose is.
That's right. And I've heard that the appendix was one of those that we supposedly didn't know. Let's go back down to Lakeland, Florida, quickly, as we are just about out of time. And Debbie's back on the phone. Debbie, welcome to the Virtual Bible Study again.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
I believe in everything I read in the Bible, we know there were dinosaurs, but it doesn't discuss or mention dinosaurs in the Bible.
Actually, it possibly does. There are a couple of references in the Bible that may, in fact, suggest the idea of dinosaurs. Let me suggest to you a couple of passages to look at. Job chapter 40, verses 15 through 24, may, in fact, be a reference in the Bible to the existence of dinosaurs. In the same time, if what we're saying is true, dinosaurs and men coexisted on Earth in the same time, and there is evidence that they did. But I would suggest to you, we're out of time, but I suggest you look in the book of Job, chapter 40, beginning about verse 15.
Thank Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you, Debbie.
Bye-bye.
All right. We appreciate that call, and we are out of time, but it has been a good discussion. We could go on for hours, and we wouldn't get to the cover.
And I think it's a fascinating topic. And what I do hope is that we've been able to say some things to help us all have our faith strongly grounded in the Word of God. We do not need to have our faith shaken by the unfounded, unprovable, untestable theory of evolution.
That's right, absolutely. So, and if you missed our program last week, some excellent information there from Dwight McGee on the age of the Earth. If you missed that interview last week, we would encourage you to listen to that in our archives and go back to our archives on our website for any subject that we've discussed in the last 5 years. Lots of subjects out there and lots of subjects still to be discussed. And so if you have a question about any Bible subject that you'd like to hear discussed in this format, we would love to hear from you. Send us an email anytime to questions@collegeview.com, and we'd be glad to consider your topic for a future discussion on the virtual Bible study.
Yeah, we enjoy it. Thanks to everybody for participating tonight.
All right, thank you, Dad, for your time. Thank you for being on the program. We hope that you benefited from our discussion. We hope that you'll make plans to be back here next week for another edition of the virtual Bible study. And in the meantime, we encourage you to put God first in your life, study His inspired Word, the Bible, and live by it every day. You'll never regret it.
Thanks for listening to the virtual Bible study brought to you by the College View Church of Christ. The College View Church of Christ meets at 1618 Hampshire Pike in Columbia, Tennessee. If you are in the Columbia, Tennessee area, we encourage you to worship with the College View Church of Christ on Sunday mornings at 9:30 and on Sunday evenings at 6 o'clock. The College View Church of Christ also welcomes you to attend their Wednesday night Bible studies at 7 o'clock. If you have any questions about something that was said on tonight's broadcast or would like more information about the College View Church of Christ, please call 931-381-4567. That number again, 931-381-4567. Or for more information on the internet, visit collegeview.com. Be sure to tune into the virtual Bible study this time next Thursday for another informative study of God's Word.